committee meeting of Monday, March 3rd, 2025, and ask Dave to please call the roll.
Alder Brevere?
Here.
Alder Curry?
Here.
Alder Madison?
Here.
Alder Evers?
Here.
Alder Rummel?
Present.
Mary of Quorum.
Thank you. Our first item is public comment. We have no general public comment, so that takes us to disclosures and recusals. Are there any disclosures or recusals on today's agenda? Seeing none. Then we will go on to the consent agenda. Item 18 is a discussion item, so we will separate that from the consent agenda. Are there other items that members of the body would like separated from the consent agenda? Alder Rummel?
Thank you, Mayor. Item number 6, TID 36.
Item number 6. Thank you, Alder. Alder Madison?
Thanks, Mayor. 6, 7, and 9, more so just for an overview.
7 and 9. All right. Thank you, Alder. Are there any other items that members of the body would like to have excluded from the consent agenda at this time? Seeing none, then can I get a motion? So we'll exclude items 6, 7, 9, and 18. Can I get a motion on the balance of the agenda, please?
Move to approve.
Second.
Is there a second? Moved and seconded to approve. Is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor of the balance of the agenda and the recommendations therein? Seeing no objection, we'll record that vote. And that will take us to item 6, which is Legistar 86995, approving the amendment to the project plan for Tax Incremental District number 36, Capital Gateway. And on item 6, can I get a motion, please?
Move adoption.
Second.
Second. Thank you. And we'll start then with questions for staff. Alder Rummel?
Thank you, Mayor. On item number 6, I did send staff and Park some questions based on some things we heard at plan and from one of my constituents. So I just wanted, I maybe would be CJ, I see she's on, to kind of answer the questions about what's going on with the women's soccer, what are some of the things that we are planning to, that we need still need to do with the facility. And then I will get to an amendment I'd like to make.
CJ?
Sure. Thanks for the question. You know, Alder Rummel, as you and others here are aware, we did not receive the grant from the State Department of Administration. And so we had to really go back to the drawing board and think about if and how, what improvements for women's soccer we would be able to make. We have been having discussions with Big Top, the operator there, about different ideas. But at this time, we really don't have anything to report. We haven't identified a funding source for the improvements that would need to be made there. In regards to other improvements that need to be made at Breeze Stevens, as you noted, we do have the facility improvement plan from 2017. We'll go back and look at exactly what improvements have been made there and have a more detailed report that we can give to the Board of Park Commissioners. But over the last several years, we have really been doing small maintenance projects, such as repairing some of the leaking there. We repaired some of the gates at Breeze Stevens Field, really just trying to maintain it since then. But I can have a more comprehensive report for you later.
And just to have it on the record for my colleagues, so for the TID amendment, the money would be used for turf and anything else?
It would be for the removal of the turf and the installation of the new field. Sometimes with the new fields, some maintenance equipment comes along with it, but it would be focused just on that project. Because regardless of what happens with women's soccer, we do intend on maintaining Our partnership with Big Top for the next few years, at least another 5 years or so. And we wanted the current turf field there, which was purchased with TIF funds previously, is past the end of its life. And so we're looking to replace that with this funding.
Thank you, CJ. Mayor, is it appropriate for me to move an amendment now, or should I pause and let others, if there's other hands up?
There's no other hands up, but are there any other questions on item six? Alder Madison, did you have a specific question?
Nope. I just wanted an overview of those items.
Right. Thank you. I think then, Alder Rummel, we can move on to discussion.
Thank you, Mayor. So having had a conversation today mostly with CJ, but with Eric and Lisa in the background, I would like to move that the fiscal note could be amended to remove the phrase authorized via legislative file 82711 parens res-24-0357. And if I could get a second, I would explain.
Is there a second? Alder Revere?
Thank you, Mayor. I'll second for discussion purposes. If I could just start out, though, I thought historically the fiscal notes were the exclusive purview of the finance director and their colleagues. And so it seems to me this edit or correction could be made by Dave. That's my understanding of our past practice.
Yeah, Alder Rivera, thank you. I'll consider that a point of order. And I think you are correct that the fiscal note is not legislative text. And so I don't think it can be amended. But Dave, I defer to you Alder Rummel, do you want to speak to what the concern is?
Thank you. And I appreciate Alder Revere's, observation. And so it's not my intent to mess with the finance director, but the language that refers to something that never happened has confused some of my constituents. And I would request respectfully that the finance department remove that, since the $1 million fund is not going to go for anything that was identified in that match as part of some of the improvements for women's soccer. It's a basic need to improve the facility for ongoing existing uses. So I just, for clarity's sake, would appreciate if finance could remove that phrase.
Thank you, Alder.
And Mayor, how we go about it, it's just an advisory recommendation we would make?
I defer to Dave if he needs anything more, but I think you've made the request and he can take it under advisement.
Yep.
Thank you. See if he's willing to edit the note.
Thank you, Alder. We'll take a look at it.
Thank you, Dave. Alder Rummel, anything additional?
No, thank you. One more thing. This is a historic landmark, so I have a special spot in my heart for landmarks, so we got to take care of it. And well, I know there's it's all this excitement about this future women's soccer. I agree. I was kind of excited too. That's not what's before us. It's care and maintenance of a facility that we rent out for public use and enjoyment. So I hope that it seems like the TIF would be an appropriate use to pay for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Are there any further discussion on item six? Seeing none, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection to recording unanimous vote in favor? Seeing no objection, we'll record a unanimous vote in favor of item six. That'll take us to item seven, which is Legistar 86996, approving the amendment to the project plan for tax incremental district number 44, Royster Clark. On item seven, can I get a motion, please?
Motion to adopt.
Oh. We'll take that as Madison moving and Rummel seconding, if that's okay. And then are there questions for staff on item seven?
Just an overview.
Alder Madison?
Yep. Just an overview, not a question.
I don't know if we want TIF staff, Dan Rolfs, to give an overview of the amendment?
Yep, that works for me.
Dan?
Certainly. Thank you for the question, Alder. The amendment you have before you for TID 44 is moving forward to accomplish two items. One is for some lighting along Stoughton Road for $155,000. This is in particular done to hopefully help provide some additional lighting around the there's a tiny home development along this area, and this is meant to provide additional lighting in that area. Additionally, there is another $500,000 set aside for small business assistance. We have been including this in recent tax increment district creations and amendments to assist small businesses in and around tax incremental districts. So these would go to things like the city's commercial ownership assistance program, facade grants, building improvement grants, small cap TIF, and others. So those are the two items that are being proposed for this amendment. Just a few other housekeeping items. We estimate the district will close in 2026, having recovered all of its outstanding costs. And at the time of closure, we estimate that an incremental value for TID 44 will be around $100 million of new value back onto the rolls.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Thank you, Alder. Any additional questions for staff on item 7? Seeing none, it's been moved and seconded. Is there discussion? Seeing no discussion, is there any objection to recording unanimous vote in favor of item 7? Seeing no objection, we'll record that unanimous vote. That will take us, don't go away, Dan, that will take us to item 9, which is Legistar 87015, approving the amendment to the project plan for tax incremental district 51 South Madison. Can I get a motion on item 9, please?
Motion to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded to approve item 9. Questions for staff, Alder Madison, an overview?
Yep, same thing.
Dan?
I'm talking about my emails this week, so.
Sure thing. The amendments to TID 51 are really moving dollars around from one project to another. Some projects got a little bit bigger, some projects got a little bit smaller. So for instance, Penn Park, the costs came in just about $1.9 million lower. So those costs are being reallocated to other places. For instance, Bowman Park went from $1 million to $1.6 million. I have a screenshot if I could share that, Mayor, if that's helpful for the body.
You should be able to share now.
Okay, I wanted to check. Thank you. Here we go. Okay. There we go. I hope folks can see. Okay, thank you. So this lays out the substantive changes that are happening. So you see Penn Park, Bowman Park, Heifetz Park had some costs changed around. The Rimrock Road project was eliminated, but those dollars were moved to another project to essentially help the same sort of project. They were rolled up into one, I believe. The real substantive things, if you can call them that, is there is money from the CDA land banking fund or CDA land banking dollars that was moved to assist the South Transfer Point, that Park and Badger redevelopment. Those funds were transferred there to assist. And then finally, in the project plan that was adopted, there was $10.5 million set aside for financial assistance to rental development. And what we determined is appropriate here to maintain the plan and our process from a statutory perspective is when those dollars are allocated from sort of this broad bucket of financial assistance to rental development to a particular project, in this case, the Parker Place Apartments, we need to amend the project plan and ensure that we have both council and Joint Review Board approval for allocating those dollars to those particular projects, in this case, again, the Parker Place Apartments. The total dollars being expended in the TID does not change. So we are still at $99,480,000 even in the TID. We're just moving money around inside of the project plan to accomplish things that various city departments and agencies have asked us to do. So.
Thank you.
I hope that helps answer your question, or if there are others, please let me know.
Nope, that gets me where I'm, you know, behind in emails and all my questions I would normally send during a week.
Thank you, Alder. Any other questions on item 9? Seeing none, it's been moved and seconded. Is there a discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection to recording a unanimous vote in favor on item 9? Seeing no objection, we're recording a unanimous vote in favor of item 9, and that will take us to item 18, which is Legistar 86892, an update on federal executive orders and directives to pause federal grants and loans. Dave?
Thank you, Mayor. Let me share screen and we'll get going here. Can you all see that? Super. All right, so we're back again. This is our second presentation to you on where we're at with federal funding, given actions of the new administration. And our agenda will be to get a little bit of a legal update from City Attorney Haas. I'll run through where we're at with federal funds in the city budget, give you some background on that. And then we'll do a little bit of a deeper dive into federal funding for transportation. And Tom Lynch will run through those slides. All right, Mike, I'll turn it over to you for a legal update.
Thanks, Dave. Good afternoon, committee. I just wanted to touch on three lawsuits that have been filed, federal lawsuits. Some of this is not news, but just to refresh people's memories of where we're at, there's a federal lawsuit that's been filed by an association of nonprofit organizations in the District of Columbia District. There is a temporary restraining order issued fairly quickly, and last week the court issued a preliminary injunction against the president's executive order halting federal funding, grants and awards. Just to back up a second, the difference between a temporary restraining order, which we call a TRO, and a preliminary injunction is that a temporary restraining order can be sought after a lawsuit is filed, and it's requested just by the party requesting it. There typically is not a hearing. The court can issue a restraining order just to keep the status quo in place while the litigation is pending. The next step is to seek a preliminary injunction. Both of those can have the same objective of keeping the status quo in place, but the standard for obtaining a preliminary injunction is a little higher and typically is issued or decided after a hearing and any briefing that the court requests. I just wanted to give you a little bit of a flavor of the language in this preliminary injunction decision. You know, so far all the court decisions have, virtually all of them have put things on hold as far as the president's executive orders. We'll talk later. That doesn't obviously mean that that's going to be the long-term guarantee, but there's been some pretty strong language by these federal judges. And in this case, the court said, in the simplest terms, the freeze was ill-conceived from the beginning. The breadth of the command is almost unfathomable. The administration's actions were irrational, imprudent, and precipitated a nationwide crisis. The plaintiffs have therefore shown a likelihood of success on their arbitrary and capricious claim, which is a legal term for basically there needs to be a reason and justification for doing things. And in a footnote, the court said, just because an agency can do something does not make it rational to do so. So that was language in that preliminary injunction in that case. we're waiting for a decision in the second case, which is the one that was filed by state's attorneys general in several states. This is in the Rhode Island federal court. Again, there was a temporary restraining order issued pretty quickly, and we are waiting for a decision after a hearing requesting a preliminary injunction in the last week or so. The attorneys general have filed a motion to enforce the temporary restraining order, alleging that the administration is not complying with the court's initial order. Finally, there's those two decisions were related to the executive orders halting federal funding. There was another executive order targeting, quote, illegal DEI, and there was a lawsuit filed by an association of diversity officers in higher education. That lawsuit is in federal court in Maryland. There was a preliminary injunction issued last week to stop certain provisions of that executive order. And for our purposes, probably the main provision is that there was a provision directing all executive agencies to include in every contract or grant award a certification that would have to be signed by the recipient, certifying that the contractor or grantee does not operate any programs promoting DEI that violate any applicable federal anti-discrimination laws. I mean, our view is that we do not violate any anti-discrimination laws, and the programs that we have actually are meant to comply with anti-discrimination laws. That view is probably not shared by the administration, but in any event, the court put that provision on hold. And again, there was some pretty strong language finding that that provision was unconstitutionally vague on its face, violated the Fifth Amendment's due process clause. The court said it was squarely and unconstitutionally in violation also of the freedom of speech under the First Amendment. Significantly, the court said that this injunction applies to all non-parties, so not only the DEI officers that filed the lawsuits and their institutions, but to all parties who would be receiving federal funding. So I just want to give you a little bit of flavor of where the courts have been at so far. And again, you know, despite that, I guess, strong language, as Dave and others have said, that, you know, this is not, certainly not the end of the road, even if these executive orders ultimately are invalidated permanently by the courts. The administration is interpreting them to apply only to funding that has already been approved or that has been partially dispersed already, and not to future grants and future awards. And, you know, there are, the courts have only said that these executive orders are not valid so far. The courts have not said that the administration cannot use other laws or other authority that it has to halt federal funding in the future. And the biggest tool for that is, I'm sure Dave will touch on, is the upcoming federal budget that we'll be keeping an eye on. But as far as litigation, I think at this point, that's all we have to report. So far, it's been, you know, positive news as far as court decisions, but again, it's certainly not the end of the road. So I'll stop there and see if there's any questions.
Questions for Mike? If not, thank you, Mike.
All right, moving on to the financial and budgetary issues associated with what's happening. We gave a little bit of background on this at our last update, but since then we've gotten feedback from agencies and have a little more information on total federal grant awards. So right now that total is about $438 million. And in 2025, again, based on information from city agencies, about $157 million is programmed. That money would flow to about 16 city agencies, with the largest amounts going to metro, transportation, and community development. And these support about 175 positions, so the full-time equivalent positions, that's not exactly people. And just a reminder, that's out of about 3,000 FTE city positions in total. Those federal grants, some of the major program activities that are supported include housing assistance for low-income individuals and families, emergency rental assistance, homeless services, major road reconstruction projects and safe street projects, energy efficiency and sustainability programs, bus rapid transit, metro bus, electric bus acquisitions, public health initiatives such as immunization, maternal and child health, supplemental nutrition for women, infants, and children, law enforcement assistance, and safe drinking water. There are some limitations in this data. These are total award amounts. So these are the amounts that were awarded to the city by the federal government. Some of that funding may have already been received by the city to reimburse, for the most part, costs. So that $438 million, some of that we may have already received, and so would not necessarily be at any risk. The 2025 program amounts may not fully capture carry forward funds from prior years. So this is what we're able to pull together pretty rapidly from city agencies. And but just to kind of keep those caveats in mind when thinking about or talking about these figures. To kind of put federal funding into some context, those numbers that you saw on the previous slide, 2025 still has some of the effects of COVID-related assistance and some of these major capital infusions, such as the bus rapid transit, the east-west route for that. Regardless of what would happen and what is happening with the current administration and those administrative actions associated with that through executive orders, we would have seen and would continue to see federal funding return to sort of normal levels, sort of pre-pandemic levels, mega projects for the city in terms of capital investments like bus rapid transit. And so just as a reference point, looking at 2019 as a pre-pandemic, the last year before the pandemic, the city expended about $41 million in federal funds. The largest share comes from the U.S. Housing and Urban Development Department in public housing. You can see that is the largest total single amount, as well as the Community Development Block Grant, Emergency Solutions Grant, and the HOME program. Transit is the other large area, again, supporting a portion of the metro transit operating and capital costs. We have provided some guidance to agencies in the area of accessing federal funds. Just a reminder that most federal funds are received on a reimbursement basis, meaning that the city expends the funds, or perhaps a subrecipient of the city expends the funds, and then we submit a reimbursement request under the contract guidance for each individual grant. And not every grant is that way. Some are funds that we might receive upfront, but for the most part, most of these federal grants are paid after we've incurred costs at the city level. We do see now that most funding portals, meaning the online methods through which the city accesses its funds to, for example, to reimburse costs, they are open and functional. And we have instructed agencies to submit reimbursement requests more frequently, for example, monthly instead of quarterly, to monitor the status of those funding portals and report any access issues to the finance department, and monitor any proposed changes to existing grant agreements that would in turn be reported to the city attorney's office. In the area of new grant opportunities, obviously that is also a highly evolving area at the moment with the new administration. Some federal agencies are continuing to issue what's called Notice of Funding Opportunities, or NOFOs. We have asked agencies to carefully review those NOFOs. There may be new terms related to compliance with executive orders, for example, in the area of diversity, equity, and inclusion, that could impact decisions about whether to supplement an application for funding. So that's some of the guidance that we've provided in the short term to agencies as we continue to monitor actions in this area. Turning from presidential executive orders to the federal budget, that process is currently underway in Congress. And we'll continue to monitor that process with the city's federal liaison and the implications of that budget, not just to city government itself, but to the city generally, its residents, and its economy. Very broadly, the House and Senate are working on what are called reconciliation bills. Both have passed a bill along those lines with the very, very general outline of $4.5 trillion of continuing tax cuts that were enacted in 2017 and due to expire, along with other tax cuts, plus about $300 billion of additional spending focused primarily on immigrations, customs, border protection, and defense. That $4.5 trillion of spending would occur over of tax cuts would occur over a 10-year period, and under this very broad outline would be offset by about $2 trillion of spending cuts or changes in federal tax law. The remainder, difference between $4.8 trillion when you add the $300 billion and $4.5 trillion together would increase the federal budget deficit. So in the general outline, particularly in what's been passed by the House, you can see the areas where the reductions are allocated at the moment. And then Congressional Appropriations Committees will then have to take those large numbers and translate them into specific cuts within programs. So you can see Medicaid, Medicare related programs, they will be allocated about 4% in cuts. Child nutrition, student aid, which includes school nutrition programs, would have about 40% cuts. The area of agriculture, most of the of what is about a 13% cut would fall on the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program and farm programs. And then other areas of the federal budget have about $62 billion of cuts assigned. That would include transportation. But there's also another $500 billion of cuts that have not been allocated yet within this very broad outline. In addition to spending reductions, there's also the possibility of tax law changes as a part of this $2 trillion in target in reductions to offset the tax cuts. One of those menu items that are being looked at in Congress is what's called the tax exemption for interest on municipal debt. And so if that were repealed, that would increase federal tax revenues by about $250 billion over the next 10 years. Now, that state and local governments fund the overwhelming amount of public infrastructure across the country. And the tax exemption is critical for helping local governments and state governments pay for those costs. If the tax exemption is repealed, it's estimated that taxes and fees would increase by about $6,500 per household nationally over the next 10 years. Another major area that has some impact at the local level, particularly in places like Wisconsin and Madison, is what's known as the state and local tax deduction. In the 2017 tax legislation and tax cuts, that amount had been capped at $10,000 per taxpayer. Prior to that, all that tax liability could be deducted from your federal income taxes. A full repeal of that deduction would increase federal tax revenues by $1 trillion. And so that would fall, a higher proportion of that would fall on places with that are more reliant on income and property taxes, such as Madison and Wisconsin. All right, so that's a quick run through of what's happening with federal funding and the federal budget. I'll stop there before we move on if anybody has any questions before we move on to Tom.
Questions, Alder Rummel?
Thanks, Dave. One of the bullet points you had said that the expectation is that federal funding will normalize in future years. Can you sort of kind of break that down to like why you think that and what happens if that's not correct?
I think the point was without the action in the federal budget that is coming, as well as the presidential executive orders, we probably would have seen, you know, obviously there was a lot of funding received by the city as part of the pandemic relief efforts. So things like the American Rescue Plan Act, the emergency rental assistance, and so on. So we saw a large increase in federal funding over the last 5 years. And much of that was one time and going away. So we just wanted to show that we would be returning back to some level closer to pre-pandemic levels, and just wanted to show this is the amount we received pre-pandemic and where it fell, particularly in public housing and metro transit. So it's kind of give a sense of the, you know, the status quo pre-pandemic, what it looked like. Now, a lot of those, some of that funding, even pre-2019, could be at some risk under what's being proposed in Congress in terms of the federal budget. So again, a lot of unknowns there in terms of how things would look going forward.
Do we have any sense of what this administration's philosophy is about funding opportunities? Like when you said that some agencies are continuing to issue opportunities and, you know, do we, is there certain areas like, you know, invest in gas and oil and you can get money? I mean, like, is there anything that would be not like detrimental to like our planet's health? I'm being sarcastic maybe, but.
I guess I could give you a sarcastic answer. I think it's hard to know for sure, but I think the outlines of what we're seeing in, for example, the budget reconciliation, as well as some statements that, you know, actors within the administration have been saying, is that programs that have been adopted over the last 2-3 years and things like the bipartisan infrastructure law and the Inflation Reduction Act aimed at climate or clean energy, I would say are particularly at risk. And there is probably some amount of agreement among the majority in Congress that those would be a part of the reductions made to pay for the making these tax cuts permanent, which is I think a, you know, a stated goal of the administration as well as the majority in Congress. So those areas I think are at a high degree of risk in what is being looked at.
Thank you.
Thank you, Alder Curry.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Dave. Also to Attorney Haas for kind of the overview on legal. I'm going to try to see how to ask this clearly, but I know information and news is a lot and plentiful, and like already within nonprofits or even like certain areas of care, like early childhood care and Head Start. I know we've been seeing some of those pauses already of folks not being able to lean into like reimbursement grants, but also confusion on funding that is maybe led by the city or in a subrecipient style to other providers. How do you, first, is have there been any other than the areas of concern you just shared in answer to our Alder Rummel, where we know that there have been disruptions for city-funded organizations? And what is, like, the messaging or ways that we could help kind of keep the communication clear on supporting some of those things and causes that people are obviously concerned and very passionate about?
Alder, I think I can answer part of that. So there are a few cases in which we have specific competitive grants from the federal government, and we had intended to subgrant funds to organizations in the community, where we have sent out letters saying, stop work, we can't access the federal funds, we're not pulling back on the contract, we're just pausing until we know what's happening. In some cases, we... like that was a result of the freeze, which then obviously the courts put a stay on, and then subsequently those portals have opened back up, so we're able to sort of cautiously proceed. In other cases, we're still on pause. But in the cases where we know that we're worried about access to funds, we have asked our partners to stop, and so they've received a communication from us already. I think there are other areas where we have less clarity about our ability to continue to access various types of federal funds. And so I think probably in those cases, we haven't yet communicated to our partners. But obviously, when we know things, we are communicating them. And I think there's another part to your question I'm not sure that I answered.
I mean, I think that's clear enough for what I was trying to achieve, and also like looking forward to some upcoming public forums that the city is partnering on possible impacts. I don't even remember the second part of my question. It was a very long winded one, so I'll end there. Thank you.
Thank you, Alder. I mean, I think just generally, there is a lot of concern and anxiety in the community, and as we have learned over the past, 6 to 9 months, not a lot of clarity on what money comes from where. So I do think that anything we can do to be clear, to share good information about that is helpful. Are there other questions for Dave? Seeing none, then turn it over to Tom.
Share the screen again, and Tom, just let me know when you want me to advance.
And I'll do that. So what I did is I put together a small table that has some of the biggest grants that we have. I don't know if I'll go into great detail on all of them, but I'll focus on the big rocks, okay? And then you can ask questions on the smaller rocks. The CIG grant is called the Capital Investment Grant. And it's mostly used for our capital projects on Metro, including the East-West BRT and the North-South BRT. The East-West BRT has largely been constructed, and we've captured most of our federal money from that. So our risk is relatively low. It's not zero, but it's low. For the North-South BRT, the CIG grant, we have been recommended for funding, but we do not have a contract for this funding. In the past administration, Trump administration, this grant program continued, but this administration is doing a lot of things that they didn't do in the first, you know, the first round. And so I would say the risk for that is high, meaning that we may not get that grant in the next 4 years. It could occur after the next 4 years, but we may not get that in the next 4 years. And right now we're looking at alternate strategies to see, is there a way that we could perhaps provide some of the BRT improvements to our north and south sides apart from the federal funding component, and then just kind of wait and see what happens there. We do get other grant money. The FTA 5307 is basically, it's called formula funding. And it's one of the, I'm going to say one of the few grants that we do use on operations. It funds our maintenance for our buses. And so it's about $7.7 million a year, and it's about 10% of the budget. It's ongoing. Through our various webinars that we go to and the like, we feel like the risk to losing this funding is somewhat low. It's already obligated. It would affect, you know, over 1,000 transit agencies across the United States. It's not like this administration isn't doing some things that are unprecedented, but this particular one probably is perhaps a little safer than the capital ones. 5337 and 5339, it varies. We use it to purchase mostly buses. It's ongoing, again, because it's obligated. We believe that the risk of losing is relatively low. We got a 5339C Lono grant, which was basically a grant to help us put solar on our Hanson Road facility and purchase electric buses. So far, of that $38 million grant, $21 million has been reimbursed. And so we feel like, well, that funding has been captured. However, the remaining $18 million, which was going to go for some solar, that might be at risk. It has a different priority than what our current administration is advocating for. our Safe Streets for All, which is one of our many alders appreciate the improvements on our city streets associated with this funding opportunity. We have been awarded that. We have an executed agreement. We think the risk of losing that could be moderate. Okay. Some of the webinars that we go to suggest that this funding could be at risk, and yet our FHWA contacts that we interact with a couple times a week, they say, no, this is safe. You're going to see it on the portal. So I guess we're getting mixed messages. If we don't are not able to access this money, then we just won't be able to do those capital projects. Reconnecting communities, that's Perry Street. Similar situation as Safe Streets for All. It was a priority of the previous administration. Yet our FHWA contacts are saying, no, this funding is safe. So we'll see. The Attain, which is a technology grant, which had a $5 million federal and $1.3 million state. There's no agreement on this. I think the risk of losing this is quite high because we don't have an agreement. However, the premises of the grant program are not necessarily incongruent with the priorities of this administration. So that's probably going to be a wait and see. Next slide, Dave. STBG grants. These are the grants that every metropolitan area gets throughout the nation. And there's metropolitan planning organizations, and probably thousands of them. Our area, the Greater Madison metropolitan area, gets about $10.6 million annually. It's ongoing. We use these grants for projects like Pleasant View Road, John Nolan Drive. Generally, we feel like the risk of losing these grants is low. However, as I mentioned, it's mostly used for capital expenses, not for operating expenses. So if we don't get that capital, then we just don't build that, those projects. The John Nolan Drive Bridge grant that we received, $25 million. We hope this, we have an executed contract. Our FHWA contacts say that this is good. We think the risk of that is low. We have gotten some carbon reduction grants, which we've been targeting towards upgrading our signal controllers and some of our lights. That's $6.2 million. The risk of losing that could be high, moderate to high, and actually, one of the things on the consent agenda at this meeting was basically a resolution that would allow us to draw down some of those funds a little bit quicker so that we can capture more of them. TAP grants, transportation alternatives, those are capital, it's about $1.2 million. We are unsure. We think the risk of losing those are low. However, you know, transportation alternatives are things like bike paths and sidewalks. And so that grant program may not completely align with the current administration. And so, you know, there may be more risk there. And then you can tip HSIP is safety. That's relatively low. TIFIA is something that we are going to look at city properties and see if they could be repurposed for a public-private partnership. That's pending. We think the risk of that is low because when we look on our grant website, the request for payment portal is there for for this one. And then finally, the TAP SCBG grants that Yang's group, Traffic Engineering, has. It's about 1.2 ongoing. We believe the risk to those is relatively low.
Thank you, Tom. Questions for Tom? If not, thank you. And thank you all for the updates. Item 18 is a discussion item, so we don't need to take any action. And that is the last item on our agenda, so I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
And Alder Evers was second. Thank you. Is there any objection to... Oh, Alder Evers, did you want to add something?
Yes. Thank you, Mayor. I wonder, given the governor has released his budget and it includes items for local municipalities, particularly with respect to property taxes and also apparently to the municipal service payments. Would it be possible or appropriate, Mayor, to get an update at our next finance meeting about the implications for that? And perhaps staff could, I don't know if that's working with our lobbyists or just digging into the budget to see what kind of questions or how, you know, are there nuggets here that would inform us as finance committee members to help us understand the implications of the, you know, the budget deliberations moving forward?
Thank you, Alder. It's a good question. We're currently working on getting the lobbyists to present at a council meeting coming up soon. We could certainly ask them to include information about the governor's budget. I don't want to be overly cynical, but I also don't want to have staff spend a lot of time on a document that's not likely to advance. So.
I hear you. It's just, you know, I may, if the point is that council members and finance committee members may be able to participate in working with our lobbyists to reach out to elected officials, certainly it wouldn't hurt us to become more informed. I don't know if the finance committee is the appropriate format for that. In other words, we should shoot high, even if our expectations are low. We're going to be in this place for several years. but I'd like to go on the record as fighting, you know, every which way to see if we can get a better deal on multiple fronts.
Duly noted, Alder. We'll ask the lobbyists to include at least an overview in their presentation, and to, again, I mean, I've already asked this for ways that the council can be helpful.
But it would not come to Finance Committee. You're saying this would go to CCC or the broader council as a whole, or?
Alder, what we are currently working on is a presentation at council as a whole.
Okay.
And the assumption that the council as a whole would be interested. In the future, we could certainly do updates at both CCE and finance as needed.
All right. Well, thank you, Mayor, and thank you, staff. I appreciate it.
Thanks, thank you, Alder.
Thanks, Tom.
I believe we do have, though, a motion and a second to adjourn. So is there any objection to recording unanimous vote in favor? Seeing no objection, then we stand adjourned. Thank you all. Have a good night.